Good evening. We'd like to turn over to Proverbs chapter 3. That's where we're going to be starting this evening. I really appreciate the songs that led, especially that last song, When My Love to Christ Grows Weak. This past year at FC, I think we sang that at one of the singings. And just being surrounded by 500 Christians singing that song, it really struck me. And I started looking at the words. And that first verse, when my love to Christ grows weak, when for deeper faith I seek, then in thought I go to the Garden of Gethsemane. It's a song written for the Lord's Supper, a preparation song to prepare our minds to remember what Jesus did for us. But that first verse, when I'm weak, when I'm failing, I go to you, God. I turn to you. I remember the things you did. And that thought just struck me when I heard that song this past semester. In Proverbs chapter 3, starting in verse 5, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord, and turn away from evil. It'll be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Trust in the Lord with all your heart." If you turn over to Isaiah chapter 26, we see a similar passage. Isaiah chapter 26 and verse 4, "Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord God is an everlasting rock. For He has humbled the inhabitants of the height and lofty cities. He lays it low to the ground, casts it to the dust. The foot tramples it, the feet of the poor, the steps of the needy. The path of the righteous is level. You make level the ways of the righteous. Trust in the Lord forever, for the Lord God is an everlasting rock." And then if you turn over to Jeremiah chapter 17. In verse 7. It says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. He is like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. For its leaves remain green, and it is not anxious in the year of drought, for it does not cease to bear fruit." These ideas in all three of these verses, trust in the Lord because He's powerful. He's mighty. He can do these things for you. He's worthy to be trusted in, especially this last verse. It's like a tree planted by water that doesn't worry about anything. It's not scared when the drought comes. It's not scared when the heat comes. Because the Lord has it. The Lord's got it. And when I was looking at this for the first time, reading through the Old Testament, it's funny because you see people that trust in the Lord, that the Lord takes care of them. But then over and over and over again, Israel doesn't learn that lesson, do they? They trust in the Lord, and He takes care of them, and they brings them into this great, awesome land and gives them so many things, and they say, "Oh, yeah, we're going to go serve this God over here. We're going to go serve this thing that's done nothing for us." And a book that, reading through, I think really highlights this concept is 1 Samuel. If you turn to 1 Samuel, we're going to spend the majority of our time this evening in 1 Samuel. And there's three main characters I want to look at in the book of 1 Samuel. I want to look at, firstly, Samuel, and then Saul and David. And two of those characters put their trust wholeheartedly in God. And He took care of them throughout life, throughout everything. He took care of them. And then one of those, Saul, decided not to put his trust in God. And we see what happens there. But in 1 Samuel chapter 1, from the very birth of Samuel, we see that he's devoted towards God. Let's see, verse 3. "Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh, where the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. And on the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he gave a double portion, because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her, because the Lord had closed her womb. So it went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, 'Hannah, why do you weep and why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? After they had eaten and drunk at Shiloh, or in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. And she vowed a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. And as she continued praying before the Lord, Eli observed her mouth, and Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli took her to be a drunken woman. And Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, no, my Lord, I am a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman. For all along I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. Then Eli answered, go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition and that you've made to him. And she said, let your servant find favor in your eyes. Then the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Verse 21, the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, as soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him that he may appear in the presence of the Lord and dwell there forever. So she goes and prays to the Lord, and the Lord blesses her and gives her this gift. And she immediately turns back and fulfills her promise. She keeps the promise she gave to God because she trusts him. And we see as soon as he's weaned, she takes him up and gives him to Eli, and he begins to serve in the temple. And Samuel's a lot like his mom, because as he goes on and lives, he sticks by what God says, not what everybody else says or what he wants to do. In chapter 2 of 1 Samuel, we see the trouble with Eli and his sons. See, in chapter 3, we see the Lord calls Samuel. And verse 1, now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli, and the word of the Lord was rare in those days. There was no frequent visions. And at that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim, so that he could not see what was lying down in his own place. And the lamp of God had not yet gone out. And Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel, and he said, here I am. And he ran to Eli, and he said, here I am, for you called me. But he said, I did not call you. Lie down again. So he went and lay down. And the Lord called again, Samuel. And Samuel arose and went to Eli, and he said, here I am, for you called me. But he said, I did not call you, my son. Lie down again. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. And the Lord called Samuel again a third time, and he rose and went to Eli and said, here I am, for you called me. Then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, go, lie down, and if he calls you, you shall say, speak, Lord, for your servant hears. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And the Lord came and stood calling at other times, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, speak, for your servant hears. Then the Lord said to Samuel, behold, I am about to do a thing in Israel at which the two ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. On that day I will fulfill against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from the beginning to the end. And I declare to him that I am about to punish his house forever for the iniquity that he knew because his sons were blaspheming God and he did not restrain them. Therefore I swear to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or by offering forever. And Samuel lay down until morning. Then he opened the doors of the house of the Lord, and Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. But Eli called Samuel and said, Samuel, my son. And he said, here I am. And Eli said, what was it that he told you? Do not hide it from me. May God do so to you and more also, if you hide anything from me, all that he had told you. So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. And he said, it is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him. I know that was a bit of a long reading, but I wanted to read it all because this is a significant story. Eli, the man of God, the chosen one by God, is put aside. And God calls Samuel instead of Eli. And then on top of that, he gives a vision to Samuel, and Samuel has to go and tell Eli, look, the Lord's taking this away from you. You're not going to continue in this position because of your sin. You're not going to continue in this. Can you imagine that conversation? I can't imagine coming to Garen and saying, hey, Garen, you're going to be removed from your position and I'm going to be in that position instead. Like, that conversation, I could never have that. And yet Samuel fearlessly trusted in God and told that to Eli. Continuing on, we see in chapter 8, after Samuel has been serving as the priest. And this is when he's become old. 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 1. When Samuel became old, he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn son was Joel, and the name of his second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. Yet his sons did not walk in his ways, but turned aside after gain. They took bribes and perverted justice. Then the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said, "Behold, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint for us a king to judge us like the nations." But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." And Samuel prayed to the Lord. Can you imagine being in Samuel's position, having served Israel for the entire life, being in this power position, for them coming and saying, "Samuel, you're old, and we don't want your sons to be in this position over us. We don't want you anymore. We want someone else. We want a king." That would displease me too. I wouldn't want to be removed from my place of power. But that's not Samuel's focus here. Continuing on, verse 7. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Obey the voice of the people in all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you." They're not trying to remove you, Samuel. "But they have rejected me from being king over them. According to all the deeds that they have done, from the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods. So they are also doing to you. Now then obey their voice, only you shall solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them." The Lord says, "Look, Samuel, it's okay. They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me." That's way worse than rejecting Samuel, isn't it? Turning aside, saying, "We don't want God anymore to be our leader. We want a king. We want to be like the nations around us." So Samuel goes to the people and he tells them, "Look, this is what's going to happen." Verse 10. So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking for a king from him. He said, "These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties and come to plow his ground and reap his harvest and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will take your male servants and female servants and the best of your young men and your donkeys and put them to his work. And he will take the tenth of your flocks and you shall be his slaves. And in that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day." God says, "Samuel, go tell the people of Israel this." So Samuel steps up to the entirety of the nation of Israel and says, "Okay, we're going to go ahead with this, but you guys have no idea what you're asking for. This is a terrible idea to 2 million, 3 million people." He says that. His focus wasn't on maintaining his position of power, though. He wasn't worried. He wasn't saying, "This is a bad idea because I want to stay in control." He said, "No, the Lord is saying this. We're going to put up a king, but it's not going to be someone that you want. It's not going to be a favorable position for you." Whose side was Samuel on in this situation? Was it God's or was it the people? You're standing with God against the people. So we know in chapter 9, Saul's chosen to be king and Samuel anoints Saul king. And it fairly quickly goes downhill. So chapter 10, Saul's anointed king. And in chapter 11, Saul goes to war. He goes and defeats the Ammonites. And is just leading Israel to victory for a minute. He's being a good king. He's doing the thing a king should do. Putting us on top. And then chapter 13 rolls around. Chapter 13 and verse 1. Saul lived for 1 year and then became a king. And when he had reigned for 2 years over Israel, Saul chose 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash in the hill country. In Bethlehem, 1,000 were with Jonathan and Gibeah of Benjamin. The rest of the people he sent home, every man to his tents. He's gathering his men to go to war. In verse 8, he has all of his men gathered and says he waited 7 days, the time appointed by Samuel. Samuel was going to come and offer the sacrifices. And he waited 7 days, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal. And the people were scattered from him, or were scattering from him. So Saul said, "Bring the burnt offering here to me and the peace offering." And he offered the burnt offering as soon as he had finished. offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him and greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, when I saw that the people were scattering from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that Philistines had mustered at Michmash, I said, now the Philistines will come down against me out of Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself, and I offered the burnt offering. I like that sentence right there. Saul says, I forced myself. I did this thing. I didn't want to, but I forced myself to do it. And Samuel's response, verse 13, and Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God with which he commanded you from when the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. Again, Samuel stepping up to the most powerful man in Israel. He comes up and says, you've been an idiot, Saul. You have done foolishly. And the Lord's going to remove you for it. He's going to take you from this position and give it to another. Verse 14, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people. Because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. Samuel arose and went up from Gilgal. The rest of the people went up after Saul to meet the army. And they went up from Gilgal to Gibeah of Benjamin. Samuel says, you're not going to continue in this. This kingdom's going to be taken away from you. And if you turn over a couple chapters to chapter 15. Samuel comes up to talk to Saul again. Verse 1, and Samuel said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people Israel. Now therefore listen to the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I have noted what Amalek did to Israel in opposing them on the way when they came up out of Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek and devote to destruction all that they have done. Do not spare them, but kill both men and women, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. So Saul summoned the people and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 men on foot and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and lay wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, go, depart, go down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the people of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul defeated the Amalekites from Havilah as far as Shur, which is east of Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and devoted to destruction all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen, of the fatted calves and the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them. All that was despised and worthless they devoted to destruction. Is that what they were commanded to do? That God said, go raid them, take their best stuff, and kill everybody else. And the command was go and destroy everything. Devote them to destruction. And Saul said, you know what? I think I'm going to take these things myself. I'm going to keep these things. It's going to make us a better nation. We're going to have this king that we can ransom. We're going to have all of his sheep and all of his riches. We're going to have everything. It's going to be a good day. Verse 10, the word of the Lord came to Samuel. I regret that I have made Saul king. For he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. In other words, he hasn't trusted in me. He hasn't put his trust in me. He's put his trust in himself. And Samuel was angry, and he cried to the Lord all night. And Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning. And it was told Samuel, Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set up a monument for himself, and turned and passed on and went down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed be you to the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord. Saul greets Samuel with open arms. He says, look at me. I've done this great and awesome thing. I am such a great servant of God. And Samuel said, what then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear? Saul, in verse 15, says, they have brought them from the Amalekites. For the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God. And the rest have devoted to destruction. He said, I wanted to follow what God said. I wanted to do this the right way, but it was the people. Samuel, it's them that have sinned against God, not me. Verse 16, then Samuel said to Saul, stop. I will tell you what the Lord said to me this night. And he said to him, speak. Again, Samuel steps up to the most powerful man in Israel for God rather than for the sake of Saul. Verse 17, and Samuel said, though you are little in your own eyes, are you not the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel, and the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go, devote to destruction the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you pounce on the spoils and do what was evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said to Samuel, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. I have gone out on the mission on which the Lord sent me. I have brought back Agag, the king of Amalek, and I have devoted the Amalekites to destruction. But the people took of the spoils, sheep and oxen, the best of the things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. And Samuel says, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, it is better than to sacrifice and Behold, to obey is better than to sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the words of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. And Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. I didn't trust God. I didn't trust in God. I trusted in the people. And I feared them, so I sinned. Verse 25, now therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may bow before the Lord. And Samuel said to Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel. Saul failed to put his trust in God. He trusted in himself, his own might, the people. And it led him to ruin. He's going to be removed from king, removed from being king. And how do we think of Saul today? Do we have any good thoughts, really, when we're studying Saul? Or is it, oh yeah, Saul, the first king of Israel, that terrible king, the one that the Lord had removed. That's what we think of. He didn't trust in God. He wasn't a godly king. He trusted in himself. But remember what Samuel told Saul. He said, the Lord has chosen a man after his own heart. And we all know who that is. That's David, one of my favorite characters. In chapter 16, in the very next chapter, Samuel goes from speaking with Saul. In verse 1 of chapter 16, the Lord said to Samuel, how long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons. He immediately goes. It's not a, Saul, your kingdom's going to be taken away at some farther day. You're going to be a king for a minute, but it's going to be taken away. He goes immediately from telling Saul that, and he goes to anoint David. Verse 2, and Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears it, he will kill me. And the Lord said, take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. And invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do. Samuel said, I can't make this trip. Saul's going to kill me. I'm going to end up dead before I get there. God says, trust me. Here's a plan. It'll be okay. Verse 4, Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the city came to meet him trembling and said, do you come peaceably? And he said, peaceably. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And we know he anoints David king here and then leaves. David, I think, is one of the greatest characters when it comes to putting his trust in God. I mean, we all know the story in 2 Samuel 11 of David and Bathsheba. We'll look at that here in just a second. But let's look at David and Goliath. In chapter 17, I know it's the stereotypical story of David. Everybody knows the story of David and Goliath. But he goes up to the Philistines. Let's see, now verse 12. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem and Judah named Jesse, who had 8 sons in the days of Saul. The man was already old and advanced in years. And the 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and next to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistines came forward and took his stand morning and evening. That's Goliath. Verse 17, and Jesse said to David his son, take for your brothers an ephah of this parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp to your brothers. Also take these 10 cheeses to the commander of their thousands. See if your brothers are well and bring some token from them. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel went to the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took the provisions and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. And as he talked with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of Philistine and spoke the same words as before. And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David said to the man who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? That's David's approach to Goliath. Who is this guy? You know, he's some 9 foot tall monster of a man that can carry a spear that weighs as much as I do. Who's this guy? Who does he think he is standing against the armies of the Lord, coming against God's people? Verse 31, when the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go up against this Philistine to fight, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Verse 41, and the Philistines moved forward and came near to David with a shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you have come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then probably one of my favorite lines ever spoken to an enemy in the Bible. Verse 45, then David said to the Philistines, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with the sword and the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. And when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in the bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. In all of this, does David say, I am such a great warrior, I'm going to come up and I'm going to kill you, Goliath, for Israel. I'm going to do this thing because I am so mighty. Through everything he says, no, you have defied God. You have stood against the armies of the living God, and he will punish you for it. And that seems to be David's attitude. Trusting in God. God's going to take care of this. God has got this. If you turn over a couple chapters, chapter 24. This is after everything from David and Goliath. David has met Saul. Saul does not like David because he knows that he's the next king. And so he seeks his life. Verse 24 and verse 1. And when Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the wild goat rocks. And he came to the sheepfolds by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. And the men of David said to him, "Here is the day of which the Lord has said to you, 'Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you.' Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And he said to his men, 'The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed.'" Even though Saul had been rejected as king, God had come to Saul and said, "You're no longer going to be king. I'm taking this away from you." David realized that was still the Lord's anointed, and he would not reach out his hand to strike down Saul. Even being the rightfully anointed king, even being the one whom God was with, he wouldn't do this thing. He said, "Far be it from me that I should touch the Lord's anointed." That's God's man. God will take care of it. And this leads David to having that covenant with God that we see in 2 Samuel chapter 7. When the Lord comes to him, he says, "David, if you continue down this road, you trust in me, you follow my ways, I will make you a king forever. Your children will be on the throne forever." He mostly trusts in God through everything. And God says, I'll take care of you for that. And he does. The same story that we just read, a similar one happens just a few chapters later. David's out. Saul comes after him and says, "I'm going to kill him." And David has opportunity to strike down Saul. And he doesn't take it. He says, "Far be it from me that I should do this thing." The one time that David didn't trust in God, or one of the times that David didn't trust in God, is David and Bathsheba in 2 Samuel chapter 11. We know the story, so we're not going to read through the entire thing. But David, in verse 1 of chapter 11, "In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem." In the spring of the year, when David's place was out doing the Lord's work, conquering the people of the land, driving them out, maintaining Israel's borders, he was sitting on his comfy couch in Jerusalem. And because he wasn't doing what he was supposed to, he sinned pretty bad. And that caused another sin, and another sin, and another sin. When he turned from trusting in God, his life fell to pieces. Later tonight, if you want to read through 2 Samuel, and we've seen up to this point how God has been with David, and how everything's just going peachy for David. It's going great. And David turns from trusting in God and sins against him, and it goes downhill pretty fast. His family gets torn apart. His sons are trying to kill each other. Israel gets split. And it stems from David's sin in 2 Samuel chapter 11. Back to the song we sang at the beginning, "When my love to Christ goes weak," that thought of going to God when we're weak. We often do that when we're troubled, don't we? It's when we screw up or when something bad happens in our life, we say, "Oh, God, why are you letting this happen to me? Be with me, Lord. Help me through this." And then as soon as things are okay again, we forget, don't we? We don't trust in him. We don't put him first. Just like David, everything was going pretty all right for him. So he stopped trusting in God. And he slipped and he fell. One more passage. If you turn to Matthew chapter 26. Even Jesus, when he was here, did not insist on his own way, but trusted in God. In Matthew chapter 26, it's right before the crucifixion. In verse 36, it says, Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." And going a little further, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." And again for the second time, he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done." And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same words again. And then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Sleep and take your rest later on. See, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." Jesus didn't want to do this. But he knew God had a plan. He knew this had to happen. So he says, "Not as I will, Lord, but as you will." And even when Peter pulls out his sword and decides to fight for Jesus, he had a way out. He could have had his apostles fight him out of the city. He says, "Lay down your swords. Why not? I'm trusting in God." And he goes to the cross and dies for us. That first verse again. "When my love to Christ grows weak, when for deeper faith I seek, then in thought I go to the Garden of Gethsemane." Jesus offered up his life for us. He trusted in God's plan so that we could have salvation. So that we can only turn to God when we're weak or when we're in trouble. Relying on God is not something that we should be doing just when we're in trouble. I find myself doing that way too often. You know, it's when I screw up or when I need help, I call out to God. But when things are going all right, I tend to rely on myself. And I would suggest that that's not special of just me, is it? We all tend to do that. We only trust in God when we need something out of Him. Was that Jesus' approach? Did He only trust in God's plan when it was in His best interest? No, because the Garden of Gethsemane wasn't in Jesus' best interest. He had to go through pain and suffering and torture and death. So we can screw around. So that we can do what we want rather than trusting in God. Tonight, are you trusting in God or are you trusting in yourself? I was looking through past sermons that I put together and I came across this one and it really struck home because me personally, I have not been trusting in God as I should. Like I said, when I mess up, when I need His help, when I need to impress somebody, when I need to do something, I say, "Lord, please help me in that." And the rest of the time, I trust in my own ability. Where are you at tonight? We talked this morning about what condition are you in. Are you in that condition that God knows you? Are you safe with Him? Are you trusting in Him? Or have you gotten to the point where He once knew you, but He no longer does? If that's the case, we can help you come back to Him tonight. Now's the time to change that. Now's the time to do it. Don't put it off. If we can help you in any way, please let us know as we can say.